And now it's time for Shelf Life, news from the Witcher at Stouffville Public Library, with your host, librarian Catherine Sword.
Hello, everybody. And today, this is going to seem like one of those conversations that's a roundabout. For example, recently we interloaned a book called Mentoring in the Library. And I've been reading through this and thinking, oh my gosh, this is more than library use. Any organization can get some great mentoring tips from this book. There will be a copy on order. And if you're looking at your organization thinking you'd like to mentor your staff, you can reserve that book from our catalog. It's more than just library. I can't stress that enough. You'll get tips to help people who are new to your organization, students who may be just coming out, or maybe students approach your company and say, I want to have a co-op with you. However, the real roundabout today is going to be with our guest, Mark Kozak-Holland. He's written a book, and actually I have forgotten the title, so we're going to get to that. But it's a fascinating book for project management, but using the Titanic as a case study. So Mark, tell us a little bit about your background, how you came to write this sort of thing, and why the Titanic?
Yes, Catherine. So basically, I work in the business world, and I work as a project manager. And a number of years ago, going back probably about 20 years, I was on a project that was a complete disaster. In fact, I wasn't responsible for it, but I was brought in afterwards. I've had my share of disasters, but this one wasn't due to my mismanagement of it.
Okay.
Anyway, the lo and hold of it was, I basically went through a post-mortem, and the disaster happened in the operation side. And I basically had to fix the project. Now, the challenge was the cost of fixing the project was going to be about four times the initial investment, and it was going to take about twice as long. The challenge I had was the executives that were involved in the project in the first place were still around. So they didn't actually see themselves as guilty parties in the role.
Boys.
So that's why I started to look around for a case study or an analogy I could use to sort of point out that decisions that are made in projects have a very serious consequence later on in the operation.
Okay. That's a very good point, that if you're in the throes of the crisis, even if I do know that I had a part in it, I'm going to feel guilty about this. I really don't want to own that. Okay. Surely it was something else, and I'm looking for it. Maybe I need a definition of project management. I mean, that sounds so official. Is that something for big companies? What about small companies?
Yeah, anyone can be running projects. I mean, if you run a barbecue, that is, in effect, a project, right? Because it involves planning, organization, and then execution.
That's right. How many of us get to the barbecue and say, well, I thought you bought the buns?
That's right. Yeah.
Small little project.
Yeah.
So this one is the Titanic. So was there something that about the Titanic that you thought this would be perfect? Ships?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. The more I looked at the Titanic case study, the closer the fit was to this particular situation, because Titanic actually went through a very extensive project. It was probably about 4 to 5 years in length. And then there was the maiden voyage, which was for 4 days. Mm-hmm. So most of the attention, our media attention and cultural attention, is actually on the maiden voyage, the 4 days. And at the time when I was doing the research, there was virtually nothing on the project itself.
Mm-hmm.
But my experience in the business world as a project manager gave me insights into the fact that many experiences have told me that any operational problems are usually caused by decisions that are made earlier on. And in this particular situation, there was a number of major compromises that went on through
That's
the project itself, which were basically hidden out of view.
Now, as much as this is a business approach and business people are going to get a lot out of it, I was fascinated by all the information about the Titanic because this is quite different. I mean, I even believe this was all an accident, wasn't it?
No, not at all. This was really carelessness at its worst. There was a quote from a senator at one of the inquiries, and he basically said, had the Titanic been a US ship, Bruce Ismay would have been liable to manslaughter, possibly even murder charges pressed against him. Now, what he missed was it was a US ship. White Star was under the umbrella of International Mercantile Marine, which was owned by J.P. Morgan, who didn't actually appear at any of the inquiries. Because the ships flew the Ensign, the impression was they were British ships, they were manned by British crews, but in fact they were US ships.
Oh, amazing. I didn't know that. And actually, that's very appropriate for this day and age, too. One company you think you're buying from turns out it's owned by somebody else. Somebody else is responsible.
That's right. That's right. And the fact that it was a British ship, the British inquiry didn't find any fault liability, prevented direct lawsuits from within the UK. But
that's
within the US, there were a certain amount of lawsuits. Now, White Star did actually go bankrupt in 1915 as a result of this. Again, it's a small hidden fact.
Yes.
Because White Star, this was during the war, they had so many orders, the bankruptcy was basically put aside by the British government because they needed large ships during the time of war.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot in that book. Do you have the title of the book that we can give to people?
Yes, it's called Project Management Blunders.
Blunders.
And it's Lessons in Titanic.
But, Mark, you've also written another book called The History of Project Management. And both these books will be in the library. So if a person wanted to check our catalogue, they would look up the name Mark Kozak Holland. And that's K-O-Z-A-K Holland. And you'll get both and you can reserve them. Now, I want to go back. You said the name and I have forgotten it. It wasn't the captain. The captain really... What was it?
Bruce Ismay.
Bruce Ismay. Was that the architect?
No, he was the project sponsor. He was basically the chairman of White Star, and he was very much responsible for initiating the whole project from the outset.
Okay.
He was also very much involved in the inquiries. He was the villain of the whole piece because he survived the disaster.
Okay.
And he was also very responsible for the decisions that were made on board Titanic, which included taking her off the ice shelf.
Really? No, I thought the architect played a big part in that.
In what, taking off the ice shelf?
Yes.
No. It was between the captain and Bruce Ismay.
Okay, Bruce Ismay.
Yeah.
Okay, Ismay. That's interesting. Now, let's back up for our users, because again, this is a really different approach to the Titanic, and persons out there who are interested in Titanic history, don't be daunted by the project management title. You're going to get a lot. This project actually involved three ships.
That's right.
And Titanic was number two?
Number two, yeah.
Tell listeners how the first one went. Should they have learned their lesson from the first one?
Yes, they should. What happened was the two ships were built almost in parallel. The Olympic was about 11 months ahead of Titanic, so it was launched in June 1911.
Right.
Now, the Olympic basically didn't have a clean record at all. It had three incidents. The first incident was one of the tugboats that was trying to guide it into New York Harbour got caught up under one of its propellers. But because it was a small tugboat operator, the White Star, a large corporation, were able to shift the blame and therefore weren't caught up in that incident.
Okay.
But the second incident was probably best termed as catastrophic.
All right.
What happened was the Olympic was moving down a channel outside of Portsmouth, and there was a cruiser, British battle cruiser, that was alongside about 200 yards away. And the two were basically almost trying to outrun each other about speed of about 16 knots. Now, what happened was...
Drag racing on the ocean.
It almost was, yeah. What happened was the Hawk got dragged into the side of the Olympic because of the size of the Olympic. It was about 46,000 tons versus a 7,000-ton boat.
Okay.
And it's basically a physics effect where you've got two boats in a narrow channel of water. The large one will always draw it towards it.
Of course. So, okay, that is a big blunder. But that sounds like an accident. Maybe they could learn from that.
Mm-hmm.
But the Titanic is being built at the same time.
That's right.
What went wrong with the Titanic?
Well, what happened was the penetration by the Hawk into the Olympic was substantial. And basically two compartments were flooded right away. And it took them almost 2 weeks to patch her up. It took another 2 weeks to get back to Belfast. They had to tow her. The Olympic. Now, the problem was the business case, which was actually absolutely solid, was completely dependent on these ships being in service. They'd already lost 4 weeks just getting her back to Belfast. So the emphasis was to get the Olympic back into service as quickly as possible. Now, the fitting out phase is probably the most complex phase of a shipbuilding project, because where you take the shell of a ship and you basically fit it out, not just with the cabins and staterooms, but with all the machinery.
Right.
Now, the problem was the Olympic, they had to get it back into service as soon as possible. They only had one dry dock, so the Titanic had to be dragged out. And the workers that were working on the Titanic were basically transferred across to work on the Olympic.
Okay.
So basically, this was a project issue The Titanic's project was severely impacted by the fact that all these workers were shifted from one project to the other.
Okay.
And on top of that, the machinery within the Olympic was badly damaged in the accident. Basically, the propeller shaft had to be replaced. Now, you can't just order a propeller shaft in a matter of a week.
And not something that scale. It was new.
That's right. So they had to cannibalize the Titanic. So basically, they ripped apart the Titanic. Now, these components that were put into the Titanic were basically one-shot components that you didn't expect to replace them for their lifetime.
Right.
So they had to rip apart, literally, the bulkheads to get the propeller shaft out and put it into the Olympic. So there was considerable impact on already a late schedule that the Titanic was going under.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that the project is becoming rushed. Mm-hmm. But let me think about this for a moment. Now, the Olympic has this problem. The two areas flood. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that a safety thing that they thought, that this would never happen, or it was a fail-safe method? Could they not have slowed down and said, all right, we thought this was going to work better than it did. We better address something different with the Titanic.
Well, they actually capitalized on the fact that the two compartments held. They actually went to the press and said, look, we've had an accident, but because these ships are so safe...
We've contained it.
Because in parallel to the project, there was a huge marketing effort that was going on. The actual launch of the Olympic was the biggest event of 1911. It was something comparable to a US election multiplied by the MTV Awards all happening at the same time. That was the same with the Titanic's launch. They were trying to gear it towards this to be the event of that particular year.
Wow.
So all the attention was on that particular event.
Okay. So actually they turned that accident around as, see, this is great, we're unsinkable.
That's right. They used it to further promote the greatness of the Titanic. So not only was she the largest ship in the world, the most luxurious ship in the world, but she was also the safest ship in the world. Mm-hmm. And this was part of the problem because... as the project had gone through, the architects had actually compromised on a number of safety features. And those compromises were basically forgotten about by the time the ship reached the launch and the maiden voyage.
Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, sure. The most famous one is the lifeboats. They put in 16 lifeboat stations with davits that could handle up to 4 lifeboats per station. Now, there was basically different dynamics going on in the project. The one dynamic was the project mantra, that which was driven very much by the sponsor, was it was the ultimate customer experience. Mm-hmm. And Bruce Ismay was responsible for that. And the architects were responsible for providing all the other features, you know, the safety features and so on. Now, what happened was Ismay was very concerned about the fact of having quadruple stacked lifeboats on the lifeboat deck, because that lifeboat deck was used by first class passengers as a viewing deck. And he thought that, first of all, passengers would get rattled, but they'd also
rattled
by having, by seeing so many lifeboats, by seeing 64 lifeboats.
I see.
And they'd also, it'd interfere with the ocean vistas that they'd been paying a fortune for. So when Ismay went to the architects, they had an architect meeting. He basically said, look, you know, why do we need so many lifeboats? Now, the architects went away and they looked at all the features they had. For example, the bulkheads, the double skin hull. And they basically came to the conclusion that, well, we don't really need lifeboats because we've got all these other safety features.
Wow.
We can actually get away with 16.
Wow.
So the architects compromised within the project. This is why it's so important from a project perspective.
That's
because that's what happens in our projects today. There's always give and take. There's negotiation that goes throughout the lifetime of the project between the project sponsor and the architects who are basically developing the solution.
Yes. Actually, that's interesting because I'm thinking back to even the library's new library. We've been there 11 years now. But I'm sure there was some compromise going on with the lighting. And they must have, we don't need it. It works fine on paper. Mm-hmm. But when we actually moved in, we realized how dark the tunnelway was coming into the library.
Right.
We had to make new lights. Granted, I'm not worrying about a lifeboat, and that's a much more serious issue. Now, we're coming up to the station break, but I think we're just getting going. So let's take a quick station break, and we'll be right back talking about the Titanic.